Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Dr. Brooke Goldner. Dr. Brooke Goldner is a board-certified medical doctor and the author of three best-selling books, including Goodbye Lupus and Goodbye Autoimmune Disease. She's been featured in documentaries like Eating You Alive, Whitewashed, and The Conspiracy Against Your Health. And she's been featured on many TV programs, including The Home and Family Show. Dr. Goldner is founder of veganmedicaldoctor.com and of goodbyelupus.com, and the creator of the Hyper-Nourishing Protocol for Lupus Recovery. So now, Brooke, my dad and I are so grateful to you for all the extraordinary work you are doing, and we're so glad to have this time with you. And now for this interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad and colleague, John Robbins.
Well, thank you, Ocean, for that introduction. And thank you, Brooke, for being with us once again.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you guys again.
Well, we are very happy to have you again. You always bring so much bright light and clarity and wisdom to our audience, and they love it. They've always loved it in the past. I know they'll love you today. You know, you use phrases like goodbye lupus and lupus recovery, and the prevailing belief in the medical system today is that people with lupus will experience symptoms like pain, extreme fatigue, hair loss, cognitive impairments, physical impairments that affect every facet of their lives. And many will suffer from cardiovascular disease, from strokes, from disfiguring rashes and painful joints. Essentially, lupus, according to current thinking in the medical system, is a devastating and life-changing disease that has no cure. And yet, Brooke, you had lupus with kidney failure and repeated strokes starting at the tender age of 16. And doctors told you, as they will today still, that your condition was incurable and that your life would be short and it would be filled with pain. But 15 or so years ago, you changed your diet dramatically. And as I understand it, the disease that's supposedly incurable disappeared. So Brooke, is it true that you now have no sign of disease? And can you tell us what happened?
Yes, absolutely. And everything you said is correct. According to Western medicine, lupus and other autoimmune diseases are chronic and debilitating, and they get worse over time. I mean, that is the understanding. And it is true that using the treatments that we have available to us, especially medications available to us in Western medicine, that is absolutely true. People get sick and they stay sick and they get worse over time. And that was my experience for the first 12 years that I dealt with lupus. So at 16, I got it and I was having rashes and arthritis and went to the doctor, found out I was in stage 4 kidney failure. And that was what I learned, was you have a lifelong illness. It's going to get worse over time. They call it progressive and chronic. It'll get worse over time and you'll never get rid of it. And, you know, you'll never be able to have children because of the kidney failure. And then the chemotherapy they gave me told me that the chemotherapy could probably destroy my eggs or give me cancer. So there was that on top of it, and all this high dose medications to save my life. And my doctors did save my life. My kidneys got from stage 4 to about stage 1, where I no longer was, you know, at the time I was diagnosed, they said I had 6 months to live if I didn't do their experimental treatments with the chemo and the steroids and everything else. So they did save my life, but I still had lupus. And even after 2 years of chemo, when they said I was in remission, remission meant that I wasn't currently dying from the disease. I still had arthritis, but I took pain medicine for that. I still had migraines and I took pain medicine for that, a different one. And I still would get rashes, especially if I went into the sun. So I had to stay out of the sun. If I stayed up too late or had some stress, my symptoms would get worse. So, and all of my blood tests were positive for lupus. I had all the different kinds of antibodies you would expect, ANA, dsDNA, all the different things you would expect. I had protein in my urine, which they said was permanent because of damage to my kidney. So even in what Western medicine calls a remission, you still very clearly have the disease, and I very clearly had the disease. And over time, I developed more things, more symptoms. So by the time I was in medical school, I was developing blood clots and getting double vision. And I had what we call a mini stroke or a transient ischemic attack, multiple of them, which is a blood clot to the brain that is able to pass through or dissolve before causing permanent damage and a major stroke. But at that point, they said, yes, now you will have this forever as well. So you better never get pregnant because you're not going to be able to carry a baby and you can have a stroke during your pregnancy. And by the way, now you also have to inject yourself every day with blood thinners or you'll have a stroke. So that was the path I was on. And I was very accepting of it. And I felt like the major lessons that I had in my life was that you can have a chronic illness and not let it have you. And you can still build a life that's full of passion and purpose. And you can still dream big. You just have more stuff to deal with. You know, I had to take my medicines. I had to take my injections. I had to make sure I managed my stress. And I was dealing with it while still maintaining a life that had meaning for me and was not about illness. And I thought I was kicking butt doing it that way. And I think I was. Before going to medical school, I did 3 years of genetic research. I thought maybe I'll find some gene that'll help us cure lupus. Didn't happen. And I realized that I needed people. I wanted to take care of people. Went to medical school, did all the training, and there was no other information besides what medicines you need to use. And that actually I was doing pretty well because every time I got really sick, I got better and the medicines helped me. So that's better than other people with lupus who sometimes get the medicine and they don't get better. Like Selena Gomez had chemotherapy, but she still got a kidney transplant. So I thought I was doing pretty well, even though I still lived in pain. So when I changed my diet, I had no expectation that lupus could go away. That is the reality that most people live with. I did it for fitness. I did it to look good for my wedding. I wanted to lose weight and I was addicted to high amounts of cheese and I had to do something about it. And so when I changed my diet to a high raw plant-based diet, I very quickly lost the weight. I lost over 20 pounds and, you know, I was looking better than I ever have in my life. And I also no longer had arthritis or migraines or fatigue or any of the other symptoms of lupus. And at that point, I'd had it for 12 years. And when I got my next set of blood tests a few months later, there was no sign of lupus. And so you asked if it's true that I haven't had anything for 15 years. It's 100% true. For the past 15 years, I've had no evidence of any antibodies. I've had zero symptoms. I have totally normal kidney function with no protein in my urine. I have no blood clots. I have zero symptoms of disease. I have zero indicators on my labs of disease. I've had two healthy boys. One's about to turn 12 in less than a week, and the other is just turned 8 a couple months ago. And I've been able to live the last 15 years of my life completely disease-free. And that's also why I'm so wholeheartedly dedicated to helping other people do the same, because it turns out it doesn't just work for lupus. It works for RA and MS, scleroderma and Sjogren's, and also helps for other diseases like diabetes and heart disease. That what I do is I teach people how to use nutrition to affect your cellular biology, to accelerate cellular repair and activate your anti-inflammatory immune system. And when you do that, it works. It just works every time. It works. And that's why I'm so excited about it. And that's why I love to talk about it. But even more than talk about it, I love to spend my entire day, every day, helping other people get those same results.
Which you do so beautifully. And, you know, in your book, Goodbye Autoimmune Disease, you provide 25 case histories of specific people who were suffering severely, in most cases, from autoimmune diseases, a variety of them, but who recovered dramatically by following your nutritional protocol. Some of them had lupus, but the list of conditions that they recovered from is long and really extraordinary. Some recovered from rheumatoid arthritis, others from chronic unrelenting pain, cervical dysplasia, end-stage kidney failure, Graves' disease, Hashimoto's, polycystic ovary syndrome, celiac disease, chronic fatigue, diabetes, myopathy, non-alcoholic liver disease, even MS, even multiple sclerosis. The list is really long and amazing. Brooke, can you tell us about a particular story, a particular patient that you worked with that has moved you and has inspired you?
I think the person that always comes to mind, first in my mind, is always my first telemedicine patient who I helped recover, David, who's in that book. And he was the first person that I actually did disease reversal work with. And his mother came to a talk where I was teaching about nutrition and the brain. This probably is 12 years ago. And his mother was in the audience and she wasn't planning to come that day, but she needed the credits for her license. And she came and she came up to me in tears after my talk and said, "I've been praying for you. And I've been praying for the person who was going to save my David." And that, you know, no pressure, right? So
no pressure.
So we started talking, and that's Glenda. I love her so much. She's an amazing mom. Her son, David, was only alive because of her sheer stubbornness and willpower to keep him so. I mean, he at the time was in his 20s. He'd been sick since he was 14 with multiple autoimmune diseases, lupus, scleroderma, and Sjogren's. And he was so sick that there were multiple times doctors told her that he was going to pass away. She refused to believe it. But he was still very, very ill. He had such severe rashes that it disfigured his face and people couldn't even look at him. They couldn't make eye contact with him because he was so disfigured. And his mom is a single mom who somehow got him through school, and he wanted to work, but he couldn't get past the job interview because people couldn't face him. Because of the scleroderma, scleroderma is an autoimmune disease that makes your skin very, very hard. And when it's hard, it cracks open at the joints. And so all of his knuckles had cracked open and he had infections all the way down to the bone. So his fingers were extraordinarily, excruciatingly painful. And because of these infections and cracks, and at the time the doctors had given up and said, we can't fix that. So we're going to have to amputate his fingers, which she had refused at that point. He's home alone all day because his mom's a single mom working. He can't get a job. And so whenever he was hungry, he would go next door to 7-Eleven and just buy some junk food. And he said whenever he cooked, he put butter on everything and, you know, lots of meat, dairy, processed foods. So it was a real big shock to his system to consider this kind of change. And so I told him my story and I connected with him on a human level and inspired him to try. And he made a dramatic recovery. At first, he gave up all the processed foods. He gave up all the dairy, all the butter. He cut back his meat intake to once a week. He started doing what I call hypernourishment. So hypernourishment is an intentional overdose of the nutrients that your body uses for cellular repair. And the easiest way to do it is through green smoothies. Most people don't want to eat pounds of greens every day, but they'll drink it through a straw if it tastes like some fruit. So I taught him how to make green smoothies where we use high levels of greens, omega-3s, a little bit of fruit for flavor, and he drank those every day. He increased his water intake, as I suggested he did, up to 96 to 128 ounces of water a day. And within a couple weeks, his skin started to knit back together again, and his rashes were going away. And by the end of the first month, he was in his first remission since he was 14. After his remission and his rash went away, he got a job within 2 months after I met with him, working, helping youth at a nonprofit. And so now it's been 10 years of zero medication and zero relapses. His skin grew back on his fingers. Last year, he won an art show in LA using those same fingers they were going to amputate to create this 3D art. He's been engaged. He's living a real life, work, love, art, all the things that he didn't have before he had disease and an empty house and no purpose, no job. And so he touches me so much. One, it was the first time I really got to lead someone through the process that way. And two, because it reinforces what I think my job really is, which is not about helping people with symptoms and rashes and joint pain. It's about helping people start living their life fully again, to get back what they've lost and to be able to go after their dreams and give the gifts that they were born to give.
Which is a beautiful gift to offer to people. But a lot of us have been hurt and we've been wounded and maybe injured and maybe we're sick, and this takes a toll. And a lot of us have come to think that, well, we've come to be afraid really to hope, afraid to act. And we get stuck, a lot of us, in cycles of illness and depression. And it seems to me, listening to you, Brooke, that when you were sick with lupus, before you healed yourself with nutritional excellence, with the protocols that you developed, you were even then trying to live as beautiful and happy a life as you could, and you still were hopeful despite the medical prognoses, which were dire. What I want to ask you, Brooke, is how were you able to be happy and hopeful and alive even when you were so sick?
You know, that's the question I get asked a lot by my patients. They go, you were sicker than me. Why were you so happy? I don't understand. It's one of the things I teach to all of my patients and all of my clients is that we often don't have a choice between whether or not we have pain, right? Or whether or not we get sick. But we do have a choice about what we focus on and what we feel. And the secret is I've already decided I'm lucky ahead of time. So it doesn't really matter what happens, because whatever happens, I'm going to find a path to happiness. And where I got that resilience from, I think some of it is part of my character, but I think most of it was inspired by the people who raised me. So my mother's parents are Holocaust survivors. And so they survived enormous torture and loss during World War II. They were in Lodz, Poland when the war started. So they were prisoners. They suffered. They starved. They had people in their family murdered. And yet, when they came to this country to start over, my grandmother especially is, I have her personality, very talkative, very happy. And she always used to tell me what a lucky girl she was. Even at 98, she'd say, I'm a lucky girl. Like, she was just always full of joy and always in the moment. And I learned through them that we can't let the things that hurt us, that are out of our control, take away our joy, because that's when it's actually all lost. And one of my favorite stories about my grandmother, which I have to cry through because I can't help it, but she died. I lost her 2 years ago now at 99. But she had the story she told me once when I was a kid about how after the war ended, they sent all the prisoners, you know, everyone had to release the prisoners of war after they all made the peace agreements. So they were abruptly taken from their prison to a train station to go home. There's no, obviously no counseling. There's no trauma specialist there. They're just all these huddled masses of people who are starving and traumatized and sick are just sent to a train station. Okay, go back to Lodz. Good luck. And she said she was surrounded by this group of people who were just barely alive. She herself had a belly that was swollen from starvation. And she said at the other side of the train station, there was somebody playing music. And she said that she heard the music and she felt so happy, she started dancing. And I remember.
Oh my.
Yeah. So when she told me that story, I remember as a kid saying, Grandma, how did you dance? And she said, because Brooksy, when you hear music, you dance. And I was lucky enough that she was there taking care of me with my parents for my whole childhood. And she was my best friend. I mean, even through college, medical school, when there was spring break, winter break, I was with Grandma. She was my best friend and probably the most influential person besides my own parents in the way I think and see the world. So I think that the gifts that she gave me were really so instrumental in the way I see the world and the way I saw my illness. I figured I was lucky. I had lupus, but I was free. I had food. I was able to go to college and pursue my dreams. I had everything. And I had lupus. So I just never let lupus take it all away. And to this day, when I hear music, I dance and I look for the music. And that's what I teach people, is that there's always music. You just have to look for it. You have to obsess about the music and not about the pain. And you can find a way to be happy with any symptoms that you've got. And when you're happier, you heal faster. So you can find happiness in the illness, and then that happiness will accelerate your recovery too.
Which is wonderful. And the gratitude to your grandmother, all gratitude to her. She sounds like just wonderful, wonderful spirit and soul, and her love for you and her choices, her focus, her clarity about her wisdom, deep, deep, hard-earned wisdom. It's very moving to me. And as you were telling this story about her, I was remembering something that you said in one of our earlier conversations, Brooke, and it stayed with me because it felt very profound to me. And you said that rather than focusing on what we want now, which is what our culture teaches us to do, to pursue immediate gratification, short-term gratification, but instead of focusing on what we want now, we should focus instead on what we want most. I just find that just very inspiring. And I want to ask you, can you help us to understand what that means even more deeply?
Absolutely. And I remember you told me that you actually put that on your desk, and I was so honored.
I did.
Because I was a fan of your books when I was a kid. Not to say that you're old, but when I was a kid, I was reading your books and I thought you were the most inspiring person. So it makes me giddy that anything I wrote inspired you. So what I would say is, we want to find, instead of instant gratification, we want to find instant gratitude. Right? So I want to be grateful for what I have now. And then I want my actions to be based on what I want most. So that's the key to happiness, right? Is what do I have right now? And sometimes it can feel like there's not that much, but is it family? Is it friends? Is it shelter? Is it your sense of humor, right? Sometimes you have to search a bit, but being extremely grateful for whatever it is that you currently have. And then focusing your mental power on manifesting or creating the life that you actually want. So I wanted my life to be about service and caretaking and taking care of, you know, people who are ill or suffering or underserved, all of those things. And so that was very much a focus of my life. Was I knew I wanted to do that. I wanted to be a scientist. I wanted to potentially be a doctor. So what did I have to do to get there? So in order to do that, I had to get good grades. And if I had to get good grades, it didn't matter if I had chemotherapy or not. It didn't matter if I was in pain or not. I had to get good grades. So I was focused on how to get my goal rather than what most people do is say, well, can I? Will I? You know, am I going to meet my goals or am I not going to meet my goals? I'm in pain today. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. I was always looking for the path to the goal, not the path away from it. And I was writing about how people have told me much of my life what I couldn't do. You can't have kids. You can't go in the sun. You can't cure lupus. You can't. And I just never listened to those voices. And I just decided I'm going to write my own story and I'm going to do everything that I can do in this world. I never knew my story would be a bestseller. I just knew I was going to be the one that authored it and not somebody else. One of the ladies commented and said, well, sometimes there's just too much pain and you're too tired and you just can't do that. She said, there's too many roadblocks. Said, don't use the word roadblocks. That makes it sound like the path is closed. You don't want an obstacle to turn into a barrier. Once it's a barrier, you turn around and go home and nothing happens. It's an obstacle. So if there's an obstacle, what's the way around it? How do I get to what I want most? So sometimes people are short-sighted. Why? Because I don't want to be in pain. Because I want to think clearly. Because I want to be able to breathe without pain. Or I want to be, whatever it is, I want to be able to go outside and go for a walk. But it's very short-sighted. And I talked to them about creating a much bigger vision for what they're going to be doing with their life. And I asked them three questions. I say, what are you going to be doing? How do you feel? And who do you inspire? So that they can make a three-dimensional picture of the life that they are creating. And I make them talk about it in the present tense. And I make them make a video, present tense, to say, I am healthy and I feel amazing and full of energy and I don't have any pain. And I'm out there working at a job that I've always dreamt of doing. And I'm traveling around the world and I'm inspiring my family who's suffered with chronic disease to take action. And when they say it out loud, they always tell me there's a shift in their heart where they can feel the excitement. So when you have that vision clear in your mind and an obstacle comes up, then you have a really good way of resisting it, right? Like the opposite of why power is willpower. Willpower is temporary. So if you have willpower and you really want a donut, but you're trying to drink a green smoothie instead, one day you're going to walk into the kitchen and there'll be donuts and you're just going to pick the donuts. The willpower will fail you. But if you see the donuts as, okay, I can have a donut or I can have this dream of traveling to Venice and running around with my grandkids and inspiring my entire family and all of these different things. If it's donut versus that, the donuts will lose. I know if I psychologically can get them into that space where they are obsessed with creating that dream, they're not going to let any of those obstacles turn into barriers and they're going to go after it with everything they have. So for me, that's the most important part to really anchor people in their recovery because listen, the first 2 to 3 weeks is hard. Cravings are terrible. The cravings get worse in the second to third week for all the foods you gave up because your addicted brain's fighting you. So I have to get them into that mindset where they're like Rocky Balboa, you know, in Russia carrying the tree trunk on his back in the middle of the snow, right? I need to get them into that mindset where they're willing to do anything and everything it takes. And the way you do that is by getting them to focus on the real full vision of what they want most for their life.
As you're talking about the why power, working from why power instead of willpower, talking about focusing on what you want most, focusing on what your purpose is in getting well. And so everybody, of course, wants to be free from pain, wants to be able to breathe freely, wants to be able to go out in the sun. Everybody wants to be healthy. But I hear you talking about finding your deepest purpose for being alive, for being healthy. I'm thinking about that there are a lot of people who have autoimmune conditions. And they may try different things. Some of them try eating a plant-based diet in and hope that it will reverse the condition. And they don't succeed. And maybe they make small changes in their diet. So they don't eat French fries, they eat baked potatoes. So they don't eat cookies and pastries. And they give up processed foods. And they make steps that are in the right direction. But it's not enough. And apparently, for most people with autoimmune diseases, going plant-based in and of itself isn't enough. Now, your six-step protocol includes, and this is how I understand it, and you can correct me if I'm not accurate here, but it involves eliminating animal products, eliminating added oils, eliminating processed foods. That's the things you don't do. And then hyper-nourishing yourself with raw plant foods, blenders full of greens and fruits, and consuming omega-3s every day, and drinking lots of water. And the feeling I get is you have to be a lot more strict, you have to be a lot more aggressive with your diet if you want to reverse an autoimmune disorder than if you just simply want to maintain health that you already have. Am I on the right track here?
Yes, for many people, that's exactly right. And not only that, I've had multiple people come to me who were already plant-based for years, who then developed autoimmune disease, like Ellen Jaffe Jones, who wrote the foreword to Goodbye Autoimmune Disease. You know, she's been a teacher for plant-based nutrition. But a couple of years ago, she developed psoriasis. And she said, how could I have psoriasis? And I said, listen, if you hadn't been eating plant-based, you would have had it 20 years ago. But what you're doing right now isn't enough to stop it. Stop those genes. But we hyper-nourished her, and 2 weeks her psoriasis plaques were all cleared up. So it's a combination of what most plant-based diets teach you is what to avoid, which is very important. You have to avoid eating things that create inflammation. But what they don't necessarily understand is what do you then need to do to reverse this monster of momentum towards inflammation and disease that creates autoimmune. So I'm a big one for metaphors, and the one that I've been using lately that I think really captures it is that I think of autoimmune disease like if you've ever watched a superhero movie where, you know, the villain takes a train and he disables the brakes and then he puts it at full speed and then he cuts the tracks so that the train's going to go into a ravine, right? So you have this out of control train that's heading full speed ahead, no brakes, into a ravine, and everybody on board's going to die, right? So they call Superman in, and Superman's got to come and try to stop this accident, right? So we don't get sick overnight. We get sick over time. Our cells will start to get sicker over time because of our nutrition, because of stress, because of exposure to toxins or medicines or whatever it is. We collect sick cells over time. And as long as we have enough healthy cells, we don't even notice it. We feel fine. But then at some point, we hit the threshold of disease. And when you hit that threshold, most people will tell me I was fine. And then the next day I woke up with knee pain. No. It wasn't a light switch. This was a progressive problem that built over time. It's just overnight, you got one more sick cell than you could hold on to without pain, and now you have pain. And so a lot of people don't realize that these little changes that they make, it's not going to stop that train. That train's got momentum, and it is speeding towards the ravine. So what I do, hyper-nourishment, I think of that as Superman coming in, maybe Superwoman, right, coming in, and now he's going to put his hands on the train and try to stop the train. And so what happens at first? So hypernourishment, you're adding all of these great nutrients, the vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, which are the highest concentration in cruciferous vegetables and leafy greens. That's why I like using them so much, because they have the best dose. And you're doing the flax and chia seeds for their anti-inflammatory benefits. And you're drinking the water so that you can make all these chemical reactions take place that require water, right? So you're applying that to the front of the train. And the first thing that happens is the train's still moving towards the ravine. It's just slowing down, right? It's slowing down, but he still can't stop it yet. He has to keep pushing and keep pushing. And finally, he stops it. And then when he continues to push with all of his might, flying full speed ahead, breaking all the laws of physics, right? He keeps pushing and boom, now the train is backing up out of the ravine and he gets it to safety, right? So I see it that way, where a lot of people, they go, okay, I've got this out of control train of illness. Let me eat less French fries. Let me eat a little less sugar. Let me try to cut back on dairy or meat. Or maybe I eat a plant-based diet, but I'm eating just, you know, lots of cooked foods, grains, beans, things like that, but not stuff that has the highest nourishment. And the train slows down, but they can't really feel the difference because they still have all the symptoms of what that train has brought them. So the train slows down, but it's not enough. Versus when you stop eating inflammatory foods and you truly hyper-nourish with all the things that your body needs to repair the damage and get the inflammation to come down, now we're backing that train up into reverse. And that's what I see as, you know, when I do rapid recovery with people, that's a program where for 6 weeks every day, I'm helping you push that train back with the best nutrition, only eating the foods that will reverse the illness, and optimizing your stress, your moods, your sleep. Every single factor that can create inflammation, I'm helping you change all of those things at once so that that train starts to move backwards. And most people, by the end of that 6 weeks, don't have symptoms anymore.
Well, if you're around, they're probably going to find the inspiration to move in a positive way and find their why, find their deepest reason for being alive and for being healthy, and get rid of the, as you mentioned, the inflammatory foods. A lot of people today are, I think, are living with chronic inflammation. But the inflammation in their bodies is not a reaction to a pathogen or an injury. It's a reaction to the food they're eating. I mean, the reality is that the vast majority of people in our society today are eating pro-inflammatory foods all day. So I'm sure some of our listeners right now are wondering, what foods are pro-inflammatory and what foods are anti-inflammatory?
Yeah, and you're right. It's a combination. I mean, the food sets the stage, and then you add the stress, and then you add the, you know, all the lifestyle and all the traumas and things, and their body has no ability to repair the damage because the nutrition isn't there for them to do it. And I would add to that that one of the problems I see nowadays that really hurts my soul is that, you know, I was considered young to be sick with lupus at 16, but I recently helped someone with kidney failure who was under 2 years old. I've had patients with lupus who were 2, 6, 9. You know, they're getting sicker, younger and younger. And it's not just autoimmune disease. It's heart disease, diabetes, obesity, depression, attention deficit. Every disease that we have is now hitting small children. When I was in medical school, those things didn't show up until people were adults or even halfway through their adulthood. So we have effectively poisoned our children, and it breaks my heart and it aggravates me because, you know, like I just testified again to the USDA for nutrition guidelines, dietary guidelines. And I just got the rough draft back where they're not making any changes. In fact, they decided they're not even going to recommend that kids cut back on sugar because there's just not enough evidence. And I just, it's really a problem. And it's so hard to fix this from the top down. I'm going to keep trying, but that's why what you're doing right now and all of us that are trying to spread the word to the people is so essential, because it's not just about us, but it's about our children and the future of this world and saving them from suffering the way we have, because they're going to get sick younger than we did. But the pro-inflammatory foods, you know, you've really listed them already. Animal products. People try to talk about, oh, I eat free-range meat and this and that. Yes, free-range meat tends to be healthier than factory farmed, but it's not healthy. And it creates inflammation. It's got high omega-6. It creates inflammation. It creates damage. It increases your risk of cancer. All of these things. And then you add dairy. Dairy is the worst of them all in terms of creating inflammation and illness. And then processed food. All of the stuff that never goes bad, that, you know, they didn't even use ingredient labels till the 50s, because back before then, there was no processed foods. It was just food. Whatever you bought was just what it was. I mean, when you go to a restaurant, well, COVID, and hopefully people aren't going to restaurants right now, but what always angered me is restaurants, the kids' menu is worse than, it's the worst food on the menu. Like there's a place we like to go to for soup, and they have a nice vegetable soup. So they have wonderful soup. Kids can eat soup, right? But the kids' menu is fried chicken with candy and ice cream and soda. And I just want to cry. I'm like, why would the parents have soup and give their kids that, you know? So those things, they're dangerous for us at all ages, but most people are getting started on it much younger than they ever did before. They're indoctrinated into this. And so, as you said, you know, people are eating that every meal. People who are healthy can handle a little bit of processed food, a little bit of sugar, or even some meat or dairy once in a while, they can handle it. But somebody who's sick can't. It's like if you were, you know, hyper nourishing yourself all day. The guy I just saw today with MS, you know, he was trying to follow my program, but at the end of the day, he eats cookies as his treat. And I said, you don't understand what you're doing, man, is you're filling yourself up with vegetables. You're creating a nice, beautiful scab, and then you eat cookies and you scratch the scab off and start over tomorrow. Like you can't do that. You got to let yourself heal before you start testing your body, and you got to stop calling things that are going to kill you a treat. So unfortunately, because the majority of people's diets are coming from the meat, the dairy, the processed foods, the sugars, the oils, all of those things, they're just generating sick cells. And even though we have trillions of cells, eventually you're going to hit that threshold, and maybe you'll get lupus, or maybe you'll get heart disease, maybe you'll get high blood pressure, maybe you'll get cancer, but it's the same process. I was thinking about one of the reasons it's so hard for people to change their diet is because you don't feel the effects of what you did immediately, right? Like if you touch a hot stove, it burns immediately, and you pull your hand away and go, okay, not going to do that again, right? But when you eat a burger, a cheeseburger with fries, you don't feel joint pain immediately, right? You don't feel your blood pressure go up immediately. You don't have a cancer sprout out of your skin immediately. And yet what you do feel when you eat those foods is you get that dopamine rush that makes you high. So when people eat those things that are actually making them sick, they don't get the negative effect. They feel that positive reinforcing high, and then they're building up their illness over time, but they don't even realize it. And yet when you eat something healthy, you don't feel that high originally, and you don't feel the benefit right away. You don't drink your smoothie and immediately your rash clears up and your joint pain's gone, right? So it's one of those, when you're talking about immediate gratification, I think that's one of the problems that makes it hard for people to really understand how bad their food is for them, is in the moment, they're only feeling good, and they don't connect all of the negative things that are happening in their health with what they're eating in that moment. So I think that's part of the challenge that we have to help people through.
Well, I know you're a huge proponent of green smoothies. They played a key role in your healing process and in your protocols that you share with people and your patients. Can you tell us more about this and what ingredients you use? I mean, I know that you're especially fond of dark green leafy veggies and cruciferous veggies. Tell us about some of your green smoothies. What do you put in them? How do you make them? What are the quantities? And also, I guess I want to know this too. Now that you've been free from lupus for many years, do you nourish yourself now in a way that's different from the original plan that you followed or that you recommend for people who are in the early stages of healing? I mean, is your maintenance plan any different from the autoimmune disease reversal diet?
Yes, absolutely. So first question first. Green smoothies. So the reason I love them is because they work. I love things that work. That's all I care about. And I like things that work consistently and repeatedly every single time. That's what I like. I like consistency and results. So when I first did this for myself, I didn't know about smoothies and I was poor. It wasn't like I had a nice fancy blender or anything. I was an intern, you know, living in a studio apartment in LA and I couldn't even afford my own bed. I was sleeping on the carpet with a blanket. So, you know, I wasn't doing smoothies. I couldn't afford organic food. I was buying supermarket food, just regular kind. So what I was doing at the time was I was eating like 2 pounds a day of broccoli and cauliflower and other raw vegetables and like a container of guacamole a day. And that's how I was getting my nourishment in and then drinking my water. When one of my husband's clients at the time, he was still doing personal training back then, one of his clients was so grateful that he gave her dream body that she bought him a Vitamix blender as a thank you gift, which we didn't even know how generous that was at the time because we didn't know blenders from anything. So Tom got this idea and he said, what if instead, you know, it takes me hours a day to eat all these vegetables. What if we just threw them all in this blender and blended them up and drank it? That would make it so much easier. And it was true, although the first versions of it was absolutely disgusting. He was just throwing everything we were eating in the blender, no fruit, like just broccoli, cauliflower, you know, kale, some carrots and some water and blending it up. And it was really gross. My husband doesn't care about flavor. He cares about just being efficient. So he was able to drink it. I could not. So we started looking at, okay, how can we make this palatable? Because this could be an answer for people. And so that's how we came up with the green smoothie recipes that we use now. Because a lot of times when people hear green smoothie, they think, oh, it's a bunch of fruit. You anoint it with a couple of leaves of spinach so it turns green, and that's a green smoothie. No, that's not going to be a disease reversal smoothie. So in our protocols, what we found is that when people drop into this rapid recovery state, that fruit actually interferes with the rapidity of the reversal of the disease. Who knows why? It just does. So we thought, okay, we know it works without any fruit, but it tastes terrible. So I wonder how much fruit we could get away with and make it taste good and still get the same results. And so we started testing that. And what we found is if we make the blender 75% greens, and I think greens is better way to go. I don't like blending broccoli and cauliflower. I'd rather eat it. Some people do, and more power to you, but I like sticking with the greens, kale, spinach, chard, collard greens, you know, nice greens. You make it about 75% green in your blender. Then you add in your flax or chia seeds. If you're generally healthy and you just want to really become bulletproof and optimize your immune system, a handful of flax or chia seeds a day. People who are working with me, I increase that usually about a half cup or so, and maybe more over time, but more than that, not in the blender because it'll get too thick. And then you add the fruit for flavor. I call it the spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down. So pineapple, frozen cherries, bananas, really ripe bananas, mangoes, apples, pears, things that make it delicious. And then you put water in. And what happens is we get people to consume enormous amounts of greens and omega-3s and water And these are people who usually don't drink any water and don't eat any salads or greens. And so it works really well. If it tastes like fruit, they'll drink it. And I've had people who are literally going from McDonald's to green smoothies and they like them because it tastes good. And so I've just found it's the most efficient way to get people to actually consume the food that they need to actually start powering up that reversal to get Superman his powers, right? So usually when people are doing recovery, they might start out at about a pound of those greens a day. And oftentimes, especially rapid recovery, more than that, maybe a pound and a half of those raw greens a day. Now, that's not what you need for maintaining health. You can, and it's fantastic, but it's not necessary. So for maintenance, I'm actually more permissive than any of the other docs I know that, you know, are in the plant-based world. I don't say that people have to be 100% plant perfect, no inflammatory foods forever to be healthy, because that has not been my experience. My experience is once you are actually healthy, and that means you do this until you're really healthy. You don't just do this until the train stops moving, but the front wheels are still hanging over the ditch. You want to push that train all the way back, maybe 6 months or more of no symptoms, and you're doing hypernourishment, you're eating other plant-based foods that have no oils, you know, beans and, you know, unprocessed grains like quinoa, things like that. And you keep that going. You keep your smoothies going, you keep those going. And then after 6 months or more of zero symptoms, people can have a little bit of inflammatory food here and there. You know, maybe you want to eat that vegan cake, right? Or maybe you want to have the French fries. I've even known people to sometimes have meat here or there. I stay away from the most inflammatory stuff. I told you, I read your book. I have a lot of reasons why I don't want to contribute to eating meat or dairy, but people sometimes do once in a while after they recover. And as long as they wait until they're healthy, 6 months or more, they can dabble once or twice a week, eat something inflammatory, and they maintain their health. So for me, how I maintain, I mean, this is 15 years later, I'm a lot braver than I used to be. You know, when I first got better, I didn't have anything inflammatory. I didn't know why I felt that good, but I wasn't going to screw around with it. But now, yeah, I do my greens every day. So usually about half a blender, because I share the other half with my kids. And then I do another half pound of greens, usually in a salad. Right now, I'm really into cabbage, but it changes. Or like some veggies with guacamole, something like that. So I make sure that raw food is about 75% of my diet, hyper-nourishing food. Make sure I get my handful of flax or chia seeds a day. I get at least my minimum water intake, which is usually about 96 ounces. And then in addition, I eat other cooked plant-based foods. So yesterday, I made a plant-based shepherd's pie with just all different kinds of veggies and mashed potatoes on top, or I may make a tofu and broccoli or something like that. And then once in a while, maybe once a week, I might have something that's considered pro-inflammatory, like a glass of wine, or maybe get takeout that's vegan but has oil in it, right? So it's like the soup, it's all vegetables and tofu, but I know there's a little bit of oil in it. I'm not scared of the inflammation because my body is now made of such healthy cells that I can tolerate a little bit of inflammation like a paper cut. You know, the paper cut will be gone tomorrow. I've never had a relapse of my symptoms, though. Never had a relapse of joint pain or anything like that. I suspect it would take me decades of eating poorly every single day to trigger it that way again.
You mentioned your husband a moment ago and how supportive he has been. I mean, he's played a really key role, obviously, in your healing and in your work. Sometimes when we eat differently than the people around us, that can be inconvenient for them. They can feel unsettled. It can be confronting. And as a result, some of us will hold back from eating what we know would be healthiest and best for us. And instead, we make compromises because we don't want to take the risk of being an annoyance or upsetting other people. Brooke, when someone takes charge of their health and their fitness and their food, is it possible that they actually create a domino effect that over time helps the people they connect with, including those who might not be supportive at first?
Yes, and that's actually one of the main things I teach is exactly that. So what you're talking about there is really a self-esteem issue. You know, I deal with this a lot in my group where people join my group to get healthy, but they're still making bacon and eggs for their husband, you know, and their family's ordering pizza. And so they feel very isolated and alone, and they feel a lot of peer pressure. And sometimes they feel like they are inconveniencing or hurting other people in their lives by choosing what they know to be better for themselves. So one of the things I work with is, you know, you're allowed to show up how you want to in your life. And you don't need to show up in any certain way in order to be deserving of love. You don't need to eat somebody's pie they made you in order to show them that you care about them or appreciate them. That you're allowed to do what's good for you. And for a lot of people, that's a revelation in themselves to realize that they are allowed to just do what's good for them and they don't need to make other people comfortable. I see that a lot where people think they're making others uncomfortable. You know, if you're going to sit there and eat your salad and watch them eat a steak, how is it bad and not say anything to them? Why would it be so wrong for them to eat a steak and watch you eat a salad, right? When I work with people whose spouse is very much not on board, I have them work on the boundaries with that spouse. A lot of times the women have made food for their husband for 30 years. And so they think if they stop making them food, they're going to starve. And I always tell them, you're not married to a baby. He can, you know, if you, you know, you don't want to make the food that you're trying to get over your addiction to, you don't want to be making that while you're trying to get off of those foods. So you let him know, listen, you can eat what you want to eat, but I'm doing this for me and I'm going to need you to make that for yourself if you want it. I'll make wonderful, glorious salads to share, but if you want to eat some meat or something else, you're going to have to do that yourself. A lot of them are afraid to make those kind of boundaries and to stand up for themselves. And, you know, I think if somebody really loves you, they're going to want you to be healthy and do what feels good to you, even if they're not on board. I mean, my husband was still eating meat when I stopped, and he thought he needed it for fitness. And he was very well known in the fitness world, and he thought he would lose his career, become some skinny vegan and not be able to do his job. But he was extremely supportive of me. And so the way we worked it is, I made the big glorious salad for dinner, and then he would go outside and grill himself his meat, and he would eat that separately. And the way I got him on board for himself actually was, you know, he's a scientist. He's got a master's degree in exercise science and health promotion himself. And I said, you know, if anyone could figure out how to build muscle on a plant-based diet, it would be you. And he was like, well, of course that's true. And so he did it as an experiment. So he was eating lots of meat every meal, 4 or 5 times a day. And he said after 3 days, he felt so connected to his emotions, and he felt very emotional about just the impact his eating has had on animals, on the planet, on all these other things. Like, he just felt all this rushing in of emotion and connection. And he's like, I don't know if I'm going to become skinny or not, but I'm never going to eat that again. And he actually ended up, not only did he find out that he could build muscle on a plant-based diet, but he did the science and the research and figured out he could build muscle much faster with less than half the protein on a plant-based diet. So thanks to me, right? First, he saves me. Then I help him discover this amazing thing that then creates more happiness in his life, where now I don't have to worry about him getting colon cancer or heart attacks like everyone, all the other men in his family do. He's going to grow old with me healthy. He's been able to contribute more towards science and understanding of how metabolism actually works and why it's better to be on plants if you want to have big muscles. And of course, we've been able to inspire people all around the world to get healthy. So I think you don't want to hold on to the hope that you're going to convert the person you wish you could convert. But there's others out there that will have that domino effect. I think the most important domino effect is the parents getting healthy and actually stopping the spread of these diseases to their children. Because I think the domino effect of taking care of the next generation is the most important mission that we all need to be on.
Well, I agree. And I thank you for that. Brooke, you are now healthy, vibrant, and strong. And your exuberant enthusiasm for life, the extraordinary power of your example, the path you've been on, are blessings. They're blessings to me. They're blessings to our listeners. I think they're blessings to anyone who lives in a human body. And I'm thinking right now of the suffering, really the enormous suffering that millions of people are at this moment experiencing from autoimmune disorders. And their physicians are prescribing drugs that offer no possibility of disease reversal, drugs that only manage some of the symptoms and have a host of harmful side effects. And yet here you are, healed from lupus, helping millions of people through your inspiring life and work. Brooke, on behalf of Ocean and myself and everyone involved in the food revolution and all of our listeners, I want to thank you for your amazing will to live, your commitment to health and healing for all, your brilliant breakthroughs, your deep passion to help others, and of course, for being with us today.
Oh, thank you. I'm so honored to get to be here with you guys. And I'm always excited to spread the message that there is hope and there is healing. You just have to never give up and never listen to anyone who says that you can't.
We've been talking with the absolutely brilliant Dr. Brooke Goldner, best-selling author of Goodbye Lupus and Goodbye Autoimmune Disease. Brooke, your work is generating stunning results, and you're bringing grounded hope to so many people who want their health and their lives back. We're so grateful to you for your breakthroughs, for your passion, for your eloquence, and for your partnership in the food revolution.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm just always glad to be a part of the work that you're doing because you're spreading so much great information and love and hope to people all over the world. So I just love being a part of your mission with you.